Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's a show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week and all that. Joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. So glad to have her here. And then you people, yeah, that's fine. Listen in if you'd like. We're here for you. Yes, we're not on vacation. No, I know. I think we're the only show in all of media where we don't have a guest host. I think we're the only show where, boy, I had a funny joke there and I couldn't remember the guy's name, so that ruined it. No, it wasn't Sean Hannity. Sean Hannity's rarely part of any funny jokes. Anyway, it's the guy with the British accent who's hosting for. Anyway, that's all right. It doesn't matter. The moment is gone. Let's just move on. I blame technology. It's like today, somebody sent me a news article from townhall.com. Townhall.com. They sent me a news article about something about unions and taking all the UPS workers' money. I saw the headline. I read the first four sentences. Maybe three, maybe four. There were so many grammatical errors that I stopped and I just closed it. It was revolting. It was grammar abuse is what it was. Do they not have editors at Town Hall? I know pretty much anybody can slap up just about anything on there. Anyway, to my listener who sent the article, I'm very sorry. I wasn't able to get past the grammar, even though I know we're in the post-grammatical age. I know that. Instant messaging and texting having pretty much destroyed what was left of language in a written form. but still, we have to have some standards, I think. I have some. All right, now, that brings me to my other brother, Daryl. I hate saying give a shout-out because it makes me sound like I'm in the hood or something. And I'm not. I mean, I can't relate to the hood. I never was in the hood. I drove through the hood once, and I was scared, but I just want to say, get well. How about that? Like, just an average white guy. I just want to say get well to my other brother, Daryl. He's undergone a heart procedure, and he made it through. It's a relatively minor heart procedure, except for the fact that it was on his heart, and then that made it not really minor, but it was, and he's doing fine, and that's good. Now, he sent me a story that I was not able to print out. He sent me a story, as he often does as a contributor to the broadcast. I believe the story was about the California Women's March, and it was canceled. The California Women's March that was to be held in Eureka, California, was canceled by the Women's March organizers because it wasn't diverse enough. It wasn't diverse enough, yes. See, they were hoping that they would have attractive people attend, but so far, everyone who had signed up was ugly, and so they just canceled it. And they're hoping to maybe find some attractive people, find a way to persuade them to come. I believe that was the crux of the story. Daryl, I was not able to print it out, so I don't have all the details. I hope I got that right. Okay, so now we'll move on into the news. 2018, I've got a story here on tornadoes, and you all know that I'm afraid of tornadoes. I'm afraid of hail, and hail often precedes tornadoes, and so I have a fear of hail and tornadoes, but this year, 2018, according to this article from LMT Online, 2018, the first year in the modern record with no violent tornadoes, none. A violent tornado, by the way, is defined as an EF 4 or 5. Those are the really, really strong ones. There were none this year, and the whole year overall has had below normal numbers for tornadoes. And there's in 2018, 10 people were killed by tornadoes, which could be a record low if it holds up through the end of, well, tomorrow, as a matter of fact, right? Tomorrow. Is tomorrow New Year's Eve? Tomorrow's New Year's Eve. Anyway, this is the first time there hasn't been an EF4 or 5 violent tornado since record keeping began in 1950. That's when we started paying attention to tornadoes. Because up until then, they had mostly just torn up pastures and hay fields. But starting in the 50s, as suburban expansion and sprawl started, they started hitting towns and people a lot more anyways. Anyway, they say this is part of a pattern. A pattern, they say. They say the cause is, well, they don't know what the cause is, high pressure. And studies continue to find out, studies continue to find that more tornadoes are happening on fewer days. What does that mean? I'm not sure I understand what that means. Do they want me to be afraid of tornadoes anyways? So they stick something at the end. Oh, but they're happening more on fewer days. I don't even know what a fewer day is. Anyway, it's certainly possible that this drought in violent tornadoes won't last much longer. There's a deep statement. He must be a meteorologist. So it's the first year without a violent tornado, and I think that's worthy of celebration. And we could celebrate. I could, except unfortunately, 2018 will become the first year with a New Year's Eve show hosted by two homos, one of which is expecting a child. By a surrogate female, I do believe. It's Anderson Cooper. And I thought it was his husband, Andy Cohen, but it's not. It turns out they're not married. They're not even together. Oh, except, I mean, on the show. All right, I think I need to move on before I get violently ill. I mean, forget violent tornadoes. People could get violently ill watching the New Year's Eve show with Anderson Cooper and some other homo from Miss America or Miss Universe or something like that. Anyway. All right, so since I've gotten so many stories wrong, should I do something serious now? Or should I try to make a funny joke? I think I'll do a serious story. Because if you've listened to the show, you know that we care about science here because we know that science declares the glory of the living God. And so we love science. We're not afraid of science. We're highly scientific. And there's been a new breakthrough in cancer treatment. A report from the Telegraph in London reports on a new immunotherapy breakthrough, strengthening the body's defenses against cancer by transplanting immune cells from strangers. Now, I don't know why they use the word strangers, because they could just say other people or non-autologous if they wanted to be scientific, but they said strangers for whatever reason. Anyway, scientists think they may be able to establish banks where you can store immune cells that can be used to treat you or your family or, I guess, even strangers. Cell banks that could be used for anyone to store these customized immune cells. In 2018, scientists made the discovery that immune cells are unlike other cells. You see, normally, if you put somebody else's cells in you, your body rejects those, doesn't like that. But immune cells are different. They can survive well in another person, opening the door to immune cell transplants, and that's what they're working on. Doctors also now have the ability to sequence tumors. They can sequence the genome of a growing cancerous tumor, and that can help them target it with customized immune cells. The Telegraph reports that this heralds a new era of medicine. Customized, tailor-made cancer treatments. They sequence the genome of a tumor, understand its microenvironment, how it metabolizes, what cells are controlling the tumor, and how those cells can be manipulated. And so there you go. It's pretty exciting stuff. I think I have more. Each patient has a unique therapy because no two tumors are the same. And these are targeted immunotherapy treatments focused at a genetic level. It's pretty amazing. They're studying, by the way, a group of people known as elite controllers. Elite controllers, I said. No, they're not the ones who shut down the government in Washington. No. These elite controllers, they have a genetic mutations which prevent them from developing cancer. Now, they call them mutations because I'm sure this is written by a pile of evolutionary biologists. But I'm not willing to say they're necessarily mutations. They're differences in the genetics. Are they mutations? Well, I suppose if a mutation can be beneficial, I suppose they could be. I think we'll find out that they're not really mutations, that they're actually part of the design of the immune system, and it's where the immune system is functioning properly rather than functioning in a fallen state, as we all are. That's what I think we'll find out. But they call it a mutation. And people with these specific genetic pathways, they don't get cancer. In fact, some researchers insist they can't get cancer. It would not be possible, at least for certain types of cancer, because of the genetics of these elite controllers. It's fascinating stuff. So researchers are sequencing the genomes of these elite controllers, learning the pathways. And I've got a quote from one researcher that'll blow your mind. He says, "We might reach a point, maybe in 20 years from now, where the vast majority of cancers are rapidly treated, or they're managed like other long-term chronic diseases, and you can manage them and you can live with them." It's amazing. If we can, as I've said, if we can keep civilization from falling into the hands of the maniacs, and we're able to keep doing science, we'll be able to unlock the keys of the immune system designed by an all-loving God who never wanted us to get sick when he designed the whole thing. All right. Oh, I knew this. I knew that this had to be written by evolutionists. Listen to this. Let me give you this. They say tumors evolve so quickly. Cancerous tumors evolve so quickly that there's no way that pharmaceutical companies can keep up and keep designing drugs to go after these rapidly evolving tumors. But, they say, the immune system has been evolving for over 4 billion years to do just that. All right. Well, you know, I wonder how much science has been impeded by doctors who look at the system as if it were an ad hoc, accidentally preserved survival of the fittest Darwinian model. I wonder how much science has been hampered by that. And it's pretty amazing that the immune system is so sophisticated and the design is so elaborate and elegant that despite ourselves, we will make the discoveries that will lead to, truly a new era in medicine. And I'm very excited about it, and I thank God for the amazing design that he's given us to work with. Now, we go from a promising breakthrough in medicine to something that's pretty scary. I've been watching this for a few weeks. I haven't known what to say about it, and I still really don't know what to say about it, but I feel like I need to talk about it. And it's this polio-like illness that has been striking primarily children. It has a name now. It's called acute flaccid myelitis. And 90% of the people who come down with it are children. And the geniuses in the brain trust at the Centers for Disease Control are still unsure of the cause. They think it's a virus. Now listen to this. I talk about the geniuses in the brain trust at the CDC. Here's what one of the geniuses says. "It may be viruses that we've already detected. It may be a virus that we haven't yet detected. Or it could be another autoimmune process." What a genius. I'm glad this guy's looking into it. I mean, I barely got out of high school. I could have put that sentence, that paragraph together for, it could be a virus we know. It could be one we don't know. Well, it could be something altogether different. By golly. At least he did use proper grammar. So that's something. Epidemiologists at the CDC Response Center say, quote, "Until we fully understand what causes acute flaccid myelitis, we can't help protect people against it." Okay, well, there's another fairly obvious statement. Anyway, I hope that there are some privately funded researchers working on this, for crying out loud. The Centers for Disease Control can't seem to wrap their head around it. I think I think there's a good chance that it came from Guatemala or El Salvador or somewhere like that on the backs of one of these trains trucking up through Mexico with the caravans. That's what I think we'll find out, that this, whatever this is, it came from, it probably came from illegals crossing the border without any screening. I know, it's very unpopular to bring that up or to talk about that. Who was it? I think, was it Donald Trump who said that they bring diseases here? And everybody freaked out for like a week. CNN did a week on that. Anderson Cooper did a week on that. Just the fact that Trump said that the illegals are diseased. You know, there was a time in our country when everyone with common sense knew that illegal immigrants were diseased. That was one of the reasons we don't allow illegal immigration. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It doesn't mean that I'm a racist and I hate you. I just rather you would not bring polio-like diseases into the country now that we've managed to pretty much eradicate that sort of thing. And one of the things we need to do is to control the border. That's pretty simple. I'm not even with the CDC. I'm not even with the Border Patrol. But just right there, that's worth the price of entry for this week's episode. Just in the break there, I was just scanning the news, and it's just shocking, the level of violence that is all around us. St. Charles, Missouri, we had another fornication detonation. That's what I'm going to start calling these. It's a fornication detonation is when a man kills his girlfriend, her kids, her mom, and then goes across town and tries to kill someone else before the cops finally catch him. I'll put a link to the story because you won't have time. It won't make the national news. It'll be on CNN for a brief moment. It'll be on the internet news sites for just a fleeting glimpse. And then there'll be another one. And then that'll be up. And so, but this is just horrifying what happened in St. Charles, Missouri. And then in Las Vegas, we have a manicurist killed by a 20-something customer who tried to get a manicure and ditch. The manicurist goes out, stands in front of her car. The 20-something runs the manicurist over, kills her. Because she's trying to steal a manicure. It's shocking, the level of violence. That's just swirling all around us. It's horrifying. Terrible. Oh, and then we've got the IRS has 4,000 guns and 5 million rounds of ammunition. Does that scare anybody? I'm much more terrified of the IRS accountants than whoever's got the guns. I will bet you that all of the IRS agents with all of the guns couldn't take a dime away from any one of us. But it's the accountants I'm afraid of. The guns, well, you know, I doubt they can shoot very well either, IRS agents. So they're not known as crack shots. But boy, when they get down into your books, boy, look out. I'm terrified. I got a call from one of my clients. She's getting audited. I'm moving on. Let's go to Turkey. We'll talk about, let's go to Turkey. Why I'm going to Turkey. Oh, yes, that's right, because I needed to change the subject. So we go to the war file, where Turkey is apparently going to push the Kurds out of Syria. Those are the Kurds that we have been allied with for the past however many years. We allied with the Kurds against the Islamic State. And now that we're leaving, apparently we're abandoning the Kurds. And the Turks are going to kill or displace as many of the Kurds as they possibly can. They're going to kick the Kurds out of northern Syria. With the help of the United States, the Kurdish fighters, known as the YPG, which is the People's Protection Units. Anyway, the Turks say they're terrorists. And when I see them, they look an awful lot like terrorists. I can't tell the Islamic State from the Kurds. And I know some of the military people who've been over there, they say what wonderful people the Kurds are and how they're awesome fighters and all that. And that's all well and good. But I can't tell them apart. And I never felt comfortable with any of our allies in the Syrian conflict. Our enemies or our allies. They all looked like enemies to me. Anyway, apparently the Kurds, the YPG, have maintained control of about a third of Syria east of the Euphrates River. About a third of the country is under control of the Kurds, and now we're leaving, and the Turks say they're going to kick the Kurds out. I have a hard time believing the Turks can do that. Because one thing I've noticed about the Kurds is they seem to be able to defeat just about anyone they take on in a straight-up military conflict as long as they have the bullets. Well, that's it. See, the Turks can run them out of bullets. That's the, yeah. Well, so anyway, it could be 100 years war now with the Kurds. I think the Kurds have already been at war for about 100 years. Another 100 years of war for the Kurds. Assad and Turkey have been on opposite sides of the war in Syria. Assad being the dictator in Syria, and Turkey have been on opposite sides of the war in Syria. U.S. support for the Kurds has pushed Ankara closer to Russia. The Trump administration announced a Syrian withdrawal. The Kurds reached out to the Russians and Assad to fight against the Turks. I'm telling you, folks, it's leaving. The only thing more disastrous than us going there is going to be us leaving there, and there's just no good solution. There's no good solution, and none of those people are our friends. I don't care what anyone says. I don't care if you fought alongside them. I don't trust the Kurds. I don't trust the Syrians. I certainly don't trust the Islamic State. I don't trust the Russians. I don't trust the Turks. I don't trust the Pakistanis. They're not even involved in this, but we're going to get to the Pakistanis right now. A court in Pakistan has sentenced two Christians to death. To death, I said. That's right. For blasphemy. Blasphemy. All right. So here's the thing. To the writers here at Asia News, where I got this article, it's not possible to blaspheme a false god. So you should call it the alleged crime of blasphemy. Because you can only blaspheme the true and living God. And if they're Christians, they follow the true and living God. So they may have said something about Mohammed or his phony fake God, Allah. But that's not blasphemy. All right. But there, see? That's a grammatical thing again. I'm off on a grammatical tangent this week. Anyway, these two brothers were accused in 2011 of posting material offensive to Islam on their website, and they've been in prison since 2015, and now they've been sentenced to death, because according to Pakistan's blasphemy laws, insulting the Prophet Mohammed is a crime punishable by death. And I think if you pronounce his name Mohammed, I think that's enough right there for a death sentence. So death if you mispronounce the Prophet Mohammed's name. And if you disrespect the Quran, that incurs a life imprisonment. So I'm not sure what it means to disrespect the Quran. I think it's a pretty broad term. And if they're upset with you about just about anything, especially, say, preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ, if they're upset with you about that, they can pretty much hit you with any one of these alleged blasphemy laws and disrespecting the Quran, insulting the Prophet Mohammed. Anyway, easy for me to say, right? Because they can't come and get me. But these guys, Kisar and Ayub, these two brothers, I mean, that takes some nerve to post pro-Christian, and that's offensive material to Islam is anything Christian. Now, Islam, it's not really offensive to Christians because we think it's fake. But the Muslims, for whatever reason, they freak out and they want to cut your head off. So that should be a signal right there as to who's making it up and who's really real. But anyway, by the way, the death sentence for these two brothers comes on the heels of the October acquittal of Asia Bibi. That's Pakistan's most famous blasphemy case. And last we heard, nobody knows where Asia Bibi is hiding, but she is in hiding. Because if she comes out of hiding, she'll be lynched in the streets by mobs of Islamists terrified of the gospel of Jesus Christ for whatever reason. I mean, I would never kill a Muslim or even get mad or fight them for trying to, go on the website, post stuff about Allah and Mohammed. They could even post that Jesus Christ is not the Son of God, and I'm not offended by that at all. I kind of feel sorry for them, but anyway, if I do it, they'll cut my head off. They want to execute these two brothers. It's shocking. Pakistan, by the way, another one of our allies, allegedly. I don't trust any of those people. So there. And now, should we go to Israel? All right, so we'll go to Israel for a moment. I don't know why. I'm not really that interested. But this is sort of interesting. So they have a terrorism problem in Israel, if I'm sure you're aware. It's gone down a lot since they built that wall. That's helped dramatically. But now they say they want to expel the families of terrorists. So if you commit a terrorist act in Israel, they want to be able to deport your family out of, I don't know where to, or I don't know, anyway. This is the Knesset's latest attempt. They say the approval of the law is an important step in the war against terrorism. They're calling it a deterrent. They say the terrorists have stopped being afraid of us. Jews are murdered because participation in terror attacks has become a lucrative business. And legalization paralyzes the defense establishment from taking action. So they voted to expel the families of terrorists. IDF Central Command will be permitted to deport the family of a terrorist who harmed or attempted to harm within 7 days of the attack from their area of residence to another area in Judea or Samaria. So this is just ineptitude and stupidity on the part of our Jewish brothers and sisters. This is foolishness. It's just foolishness. So I have a suggestion to stop terrorism. If you are convicted or caught in the act, or we know you committed a terrorist act, we're going to execute you and your whole family and everyone in your neighborhood. Executed. All of them. And we're going to blow up every house, and we're going to bulldoze it, and we're going to pound salt into the earth. And two or three times, and terrorism would stop. Anyway, I don't understand this effort to increase deterrence. Deterrence must not be something that can be increased. Deterrence has to be absolute. That's all. I mean, why play around with it? Because you're going to get people killed. If you commit a terrorist act, your family and all the surrounding families in the whole neighborhood will be struck and killed immediately with extreme prejudice and without any mercy and without any consideration for their guilt or innocence. Their blood is on your head. That's it. And then you don't have to tweak it. And you don't have to figure out where in Judea or Samaria you can export the terrorists so they can sit and fume and gather allies to launch another terrorist attack. No, you kill them, you kill their whole neighborhood. And I know it sounds really brutal, right? But people are being killed at the rate in the tens of thousands every year by these terrorists. And with this strategy, with my strategy, there would be a few hundred people killed, probably, and the terrorism would stop. People say you can't stop it. Well, you can stop it. I just told you how to stop it. But do we have anyone who understands how to stop it? Unfortunately, we do not. And apparently neither do the Jews. But hey, that's why we're on the air. We're here to help. Doug McBurney, and that was two guys dueling with guitars, which is the way we should do it. Forget all these fights and terrorism. We should only duel with guitars. Dueling guitar solos. All right. Now, so the printer, the article from my other brother Daryl finally made it out of my printer during the break, and I realized that I was mistaken. The California Women's March in Eureka was not canceled due to ugliness and the lack of attractive people. It was because everyone who planned to attend was white, and the organizers were offended by that. So they said, until we can get some more diversity in here, we're going to cancel this thing. So anyway, it turns out that they were also ugly. So you can see my confusion. So there. But I've corrected myself right there. So that no longer counts as a mistake. All right. And so now we go to Rio de Janeiro. Rio de Janeiro is apparently infested with crime. Not shocking. But apparently there are these areas called favelas, where residents live under the sway of drug traffickers, according to Bloomberg. Gangs position roadblocks and lookouts to impede police, and in their war against rival gangs, to keep the rival gangs out of their neighborhoods. Well, the new governor-elect, Wilson Witzel is the governor-elect in Rio de Janeiro. He doesn't sound Brazilian. Is that Brazil? Or am I? My public school is showing. Rio de Janeiro. Look that one up. I think it's Brazil. But I did go to public school, so I could be wrong. Anyway, Wilson Witzel is going to engage what he calls license to kill policing, where he's going to train sharpshooters with rifles, and they're basically going to look with telescopes into these communities, and if they see anyone with a rifle, they're going to shoot them and kill them. So that's how bad it's gotten. He says the protocol will be to immediately neutralize and slaughter anyone who has a rifle. Wow. This governor was elected along with the president there, Jair Bolsonaro, promising a brutal crackdown on criminals. And people are worried that it's going to turn into what they say it could devolve into a storm of extrajudicial killings. Well, if it's the president and the governor who are killing criminals, it's not extrajudicial because they have the authority to do that. Now, could this degenerate into absolutely? And chances are it will. But I think the term extrajudicial is incorrect because the executive has the power of the judiciary. The executive may, if he chooses to, be the judge, the jury, and the executioner. In fact, he can just forget about the jury. He could just be the judge and the executioner. And it's not a, but anyways, this is ugliness. And folks, I mean, you look, this is Latin America, right? It's a third world dictatorship that's overrun with drug gangs and violence. And the government is so utterly corrupt and horrible that they've actually elected a president who said, look, I'm going to slaughter a bunch of people. And that's how he won the election. Similar to what happened in the Philippines. And this is what happens, is there's always an overreaction. So you think you can tolerate crime and sexual immorality and deviance and drugs and violence, and that you can just process the criminals through and try your hand at rehabilitation and fill the prisons. And you think you could do all that and get by with all that. But at some point you lose control and it spirals into something so violent and horribly ugly that the people elect a tyrant. They'll find a tyrant to save them. And it's happening in the Philippines. It's happening here in Rio de Janeiro. And I'm telling you, it's coming to a community near you. I mean, for crying out loud, you got a fornicating couple in Missouri turns into a bloodbath. You've got a manicurist killed over a manicure. I mean, at some point, things are going to get out of control. I think they're already out of control. I think there is an epidemic of violence, of violent crime, an epidemic. All right, but we seem unable to or ill-equipped to deal with it. And in the meantime, we've got the Russians. The Russians are building. What are they going to do here? They're gonna land some of their supersonic nuclear bombers on the Isle de Orchila off the coast of Venezuela. So the Russians are going to have their nuke bombers in our hemisphere for the first time since the Cuban Missile Crisis back in 1962, back when we realized even a guy like John F. Kennedy, a fairly immoral empty shirt, even he knew that you could not allow the Russians to have a base in our hemisphere, but the Russians have a base. And they say they're sending their nuclear bombers to the Isla de Orchila off the coast of Venezuela. Well, we'll just see how that goes. We'll see if anybody's paying attention. It's kind of hard to pay attention to what the Russians are doing when you've got a bloodbath right here in your own backyard. And so there you have that. Let's see. Here we go into the decline and fall file. Oh, that's what the Russian Navy is up to, by the way. These will be Russian naval aviators who will be stationed in Venezuela in our hemisphere, quite possibly. So the Russian Navy is doing what navies do. But meanwhile, here in America, from the decline and fall file, a Navy sailor has recreated the iconic Second World War kissing photo. Now, you all remember this photo, right? It's very famous. Very famous of a young naval veteran, obviously just returning from many years of overseas duty. He grabs the nurse and they do the big kiss, and there's the iconic photograph, right? Well, this Navy sailor has reenacted that very photo with his husband. With his husband. Remember I talked about being violently ill? First of all, a man cannot have a husband, okay? That's all. I mean, grammar aside, let's just deal in reality. A man cannot have a husband. I don't care what he says about it. I don't care how they want to act about it. And the last thing we need to see is something like that out in public, but there it is. Well, apparently, these two homos are experiencing what they perceive as a homophobic backlash. And meaning there are still some sane people in the country. So some people are freaked out by this. They're like, ooh, that's disgusting. Because we all grew up with that photo, right? I mean, we all know that photo. And now that now the homos have come and they've occupied that photo. That's unbelievable. Anyway, they say that, yeah, listen to this. Brian returned home after 7 months in the Gulf to greet his husband of 1 year, Kenneth. That's, by the way, that's very common amongst the homos. It's a husband of 1 year. It's usually about a year or so.
Because they're away, right?
Yeah, that's right. If he had not been stationed overseas, they would already be getting a divorce. Or they would have beaten each other up and they'd be in jail. All right, anyway. So Brian, he won a lottery to perform the ceremonial first kiss, which is a Navy tradition. So whenever a ship comes back, someone on the ship is allowed to do the first kiss. Well, guess what? The guy who happened to win the lottery to do it happens to be a homo. And so the captain of the ship, certainly not allowed to say, well, wait a minute. The last thing we want to do is have a couple of homos kissing in front of God and everybody off of my ship. Forget that. Find me a normal sailor. And that's a hard, that's a tall tale. That's a difficult task right there. Find one who's not a, no, I don't. I'm just joking about my Navy brethren. All right. So anyway, the News 4 in Jacksonville says they were bombarded by hate messages. That's normal people getting grossed out by these two appropriating that iconic image. That's just, now, is normal people being disgusted by disgusting behavior, is that now hate? I believe that's what they're saying here. So you see this kind of display in, I generally don't even want to see normal people kissing each other. Thank you very much. You know? But to see this in public and then now it's a hate message if you say, man, that really grossed me out. I almost puked. That's the hate message. You know what I hate? The feeling in my stomach when I saw those two guys slobbering on. It's just disgusting. All right. Let's leave that aside, though, because, well, for obvious reasons. Here we go. Let's get to the paycheck to paycheck sob stories from the federal workers. So you're all aware that there's a government shutdown, a partial government shutdown. Have you noticed that the news media this time, they're calling it a partial government shutdown? I'm not sure how that worked its way into the vernacular, but I'm glad it has, because almost none of the government is actually shut down. And by the way, here's a note to any of you slack-jawed federal workers who are not working this week. If you are not working this week, your job is a bogus patronage job. And you are officially, you can look in the mirror and know that you are contributing less to society than you are taking. That's, so there. Get over yourself, okay? You are unnecessary. No, you are not unnecessary. I don't mean to say that. I'm sure you're a fine human being. But your job is not necessary. You should be ashamed of yourself. It should hurt your feelings. It should make you reevaluate your whole life, the fact that they actually don't need you. I mean, do you really want to do that? So anyway, the local news here in Colorado, every night they've been telling the sob stories. Last night it was food. Federal workers may not be able to buy food. Oh, the humanity. Can't get, why? Because, well, they live paycheck to paycheck. According to this article from Philly.com, paycheck to paycheck is the average person's life experience, apparently. They say 4 in 10 adults say they couldn't come up with $400 in an emergency without, like, selling something or having to borrow it. $400. All right, so if you've been working for more than, like, 1 year and you can't come up with $400, you need to reevaluate your whole situation because you're making some serious errors of judgment. That's all. Philly.com goes on, the partial government shutdown is temporarily halting pay for 800,000 unnecessary federal workers. Oh, I added unnecessary. There's 800,000 of them, for crying out loud. Anyway, Trump says it could last a long time. And we got a quote here from Heidi. She's a former chief economist at the Department of Labor. Yeah, I used to be at the Department of Labor. Now I study how middle-class families spend their wages. I do my studies at the Economic Policy Institute, which, as I'm sure you've already guessed, means I used to work for Obama. Yeah. Former Obama hack Heidi says, it's astronomical what people need just to make it month to month. And I'm thinking, what's astronomical? What does that mean, it's astronomical? To live, like, from one month to the next month, it takes some kind of astronomical amount of what? Effort, work, money, food, drugs? I mean, what are you talking about? She says, given the high cost of transportation, housing, healthcare, there's often no wiggle room. All right. Yeah, if you're not going to work, I just can't get. Oh, well, by the way, the Economic Policy Institute is a Washington-based think tank funded by foundations and unions. Yeah, that could also be stated as government employees and homosexuals. But they go on over at Philly.com. They go on. Yes, federal workers are losing money this holiday season, because some of them are employed by contractors, and they won't be eligible for makeup checks. Oh, no. They could run out of food. They'll be dying in the streets. Can you imagine what happens to a federal worker if they can't eat for 2 weeks? Hopefully someone can figure out how to get them some water. Got to come back. This is one of those deals where I could let that one roll for 3 more minutes easily. But unfortunate for everyone who's listening to Stevie Ray, we have to return to reality. So I was thinking about it in the break that, the reason the local news and all the politicians are weeping and crying for the starving federal workers who are going to be emaciated and gaunt and could be dropping in the streets by the end, is because politicians and the news media, for whatever reason, probably because they're in bed together, they make a living patronizing people who make poor financial decisions. They make a living telling them that they're great. You can't work any harder. You can't do any more. I'm here to get you what you deserve. You're great. You're the backbone of the country. You're a working family. When most of them are financially illiterate morons with no ambition and no discipline, and they really need to be slapped upside the head and said, you can't come up with $400? What's your problem? Anyway, I don't have to patronize anybody. And by the way, the only people whose poverty I respect are preachers and missionaries. In fact, if they have too much money, I get suspicious of them. But a preacher and a missionary, they have every right to be poor and proud of it. Everyone else, you're making bad decisions. You need to work on a number of areas of your life, I'm sure is what it is. All right. So no patronization here. It's tough love is what you get here. All right. Now, we move. The federal debt. The federal debt is up. As you get to shocking, right? It's $22 trillion now. Christmas to Christmas increase of about $4,200 per person. All right. But if, all right. Well, so that's it. I'm just reporting the news. Donald Trump, the king of debt. He's going to save America. He's spending us into the poorhouse. He's robbing my grandchildren blind. He's robbing them as fast, if not faster, than Barack Obama. And didn't all you conservatives tell me Barack Obama was the end of the world? Could Hillary possibly spend any more drunken sailor-like? Is that even possible that she could outspend? All right, I'll move on. Now we go into the science, really, file, where we have an expert who says that declining fertility rates are actually good. Yes, as reported by the pile of deviants and perverts over at The Guardian in the UK. Had I realized this was a Guardian story, I would not have included it in the show. But I've already teased it, so yes, this expert says that declining fertility rates around the world should be cause for celebration and not alarm. That's Sarah Harper, former director of the Royal Institution, an expert on population change at the University of Oxford, indeed. She says, countries should not worry if their population is not growing. This idea that you need lots and lots of people is really old thinking. Fewer children is positive, especially from an environmental point of view, which is the only point of view I have is environmental points, you see. Having one fewer child reduces a parent's carbon footprint by 58 tons of CO2 every year. Capping consumption is also crucial. And she goes on and on. She has kids herself, by the way. How many does she have? 2.1. No. 1.4. I can't say. It said in here that she has three children of her own, by the way. Imagine that. But she says that if families have to deal with a large number of... Oh, I'm sorry. If families have to deal with a large number of dependents... It takes away resources that could drive the economy and drive technology. And we should all stop pushing this pro-natalism. Pro-natalism, she says. Anyway, so do you hear what she's saying? I thought that having a large number of children... I thought that was driving the economy and society. I thought that's what it was all about. How else do you have an economy if you don't have kids? What do you sit around and, I don't know, I guess you go out to Starbucks and smoke pot and take Xanax. I mean, does that drive the economy? I mean, what drives the economy is a guy wakes up, he's got mouths to feed, he's got to go out and work. Oh, but that's old thinking. Old. It's old. Pronatalism is what it is. Pronatalism. All right. Meanwhile, we go to the real religion file as we leave aside the expert in population change over the Royal Academy there. No, I'm sorry. I apologize. The Royal Institution, forgive me. We go to the real religion file where a Catholic priest has gotten into some hot water because he presided over the funeral of an 18-year-old who killed himself, and he told mourners at the funeral that people who kill themselves generally go to hell. And that upset everyone. at the funeral of the 18-year-old who had just killed himself. By the way, Catholic doctrine officially says that killing yourself is a sin, and I believe that it's a sin that's it's like unpardonable, unforgivable. I think the Catholics hold that if you kill yourself, you go straight to hell with a jet rocket on a grease pole. I believe that's official Catholic doctrine. And so all this priest was doing his job, telling people, hey, if you kill yourself, you're going to go to hell. Now, he did sugarcoat it a little bit. He said the teen may be kept out of heaven. That's a nice way of saying may burn in hell for all eternity. The parents of the teenager who killed himself say he disparaged and condemned their son during the service. Well, you know what, Mom and Dad? That's the last thing that would be on my mind is what the average Catholic priest thinks about my son. I would be worried about the destination of my son's eternal soul, seeing as he had actually killed himself. Oh, by the way, we do not hold here at the Weekly Worldview that suicide is an unpardonable sin, but we do hold that it is a sin, and that if you kill yourself, you're one of the most horrible, worst people on the planet. I have a business associate who recently had a family member attempt suicide, and it wasn't one of these cry for helps, I took a bunch of pills, I slit my wrist with a paper cut. No, it wasn't that. If by chance someone hadn't walked into the room, the kid would be dead. It was a serious suicide attempt. I'm talking with my business associate. And she's breaking down in tears about how, and she's just having, and I said, you know what? You should call him up and say, look, what you did is the most horrible thing anyone ever did to me. Why do you want to hurt me like this? You selfish little bastard. That's what he needs to hear. So anyway, if you kill yourself, you're one of the worst human beings on the planet. Not that God can't save you. I mean, God is able to, obviously, he's paid the price for any sin. There is no unforgivable sin that you can commit. But you're just a horrible, awful human being, and your name should be blotted out from history, except maybe to be given as an example of one of the worst people to ever live if you kill yourself. If you're contemplating suicide right now, I got some suicide help for you. You're a horrible, horrible person for even contemplating doing that to all the people around you. You're awful. You should be ashamed of yourself. Now get up off of here and forget about that stuff. Yeah. All right. That's my suicide helpline for the day. Call me up. I'll give you what for. Anyway, the family at the funeral of the kid who killed himself said, we wanted the priest to celebrate how Mason lived, not how he died. Well, isn't that nice and convenient for what you want? But maybe the Catholic priest actually cares about the souls that he's encountering there at the service. And maybe he wants to do something of value add some value to their life by telling them how suicide, you end up in hell. Most people who commit suicide, I believe, end up in hell. Anyway, and that's all he said. Several boys walked out of the church crying. Good. It's about time they heard something that made them cry, for crying out loud. Let's all just stand around and weep and light candles and set balloons off in the sky. How about get real? Now, don't be a selfish little monster. Ruin other people's lives just because you're a miserable little brat. All right, I think I've pretty much addressed the whole suicide issue. Thank you very much. And so we could just go into the justice file. I mean, this is unbelievable. We have a teenager in Tupelo, Mississippi. He's been jailed after he was arrested for a drive-by shooting death of a 66-year-old woman. This 72-year-old monster fired into a house, and he killed Annie Watson, a 66-year-old innocent woman on Pearl Harbor Day. He fired into her house for no apparent good reason. He might have been thinking he was shooting at other people. He killed Annie Walton. He killed her, and he wounded four other people. He was out of jail after having been charged with first-degree murder back on March 22nd. Did you get that? He was out of jail, even though he had been charged with first-degree murder. March 22nd, he shot and killed someone at a car wash. He also was arrested for aggravated assault in a July 8th convenience store shooting. How is this guy not in under the jail? Anyway, now he's been jailed. But we don't know how long he'll stay in. He might be out tonight. But now he's accused of violating the previous release terms. So he had terms. So hopefully there won't be any more release terms. That's from the catch and release file. We've got another one. It's just unbelievable. The amount of... the level of violence that we are all being expected to tolerate and live through on a daily basis is simply not acceptable, okay? I think it's damaging our mental health. And number one, it makes you a more callous person to have to talk about an endless stream of bloodshed and massacres. That's at the very least. And then what about the people who are actually involved? Well, it'll be you and me before long. I mean, it's just a numbers game at this point. Before this bloodbath doesn't touch you or me directly. And I'd like to do something about it before it gets to that. We go now to high school. Reason number 1,182 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. A former high school student in Fort Worth was sentenced to 12 years in prison. What did he do? He slit a classmate's throat. Uh-huh. Yes, yes, yes. So the judge sentenced him to a very creative 12-year prison sentence. This 19-year-old had pleaded guilty to aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Thankfully, the kid didn't die. But, I mean, he slit the kid's throat. He's going to do 12 years. We have a quote from the prosecutor. He says, students and parents should not have to worry about violent attacks like this at school. Talk about another governing official stating the fairly obvious. Yeah. But guess what? High school kids are worried about violent attacks like this and worse every day. And that cannot be good for their mental health. No wonder the millennials are terrified of everything. They go to school every day thinking they could be shot. Can you imagine what that does to a young person? I can't even comprehend it. I'd probably be on Xanax too. The prosecutor also says it was important that the defendant be sent to prison for this attack. Actually, you're wrong about that, Mr. Prosecutor. The defendant should have been executed quickly and painfully in front of the rest of the student body. That way, no one at the student body would ever have to worry about a violent attack like this again, because they would have seen justice meted out against the attacker, against the guilty one. They would have seen that he no longer walks among us. Everybody would have noticed that, believe me. And then the level of tension at school the next day would have been orders of magnitude less. Because anyone else who was thinking about violently attacking or killing or shooting up or blowing up anything, so I would be deterred. Thank you very much. All right. So we have another, a song. So a song started at a Virginia skating rink. It was a rap song, a hip-hop song. I apologize. And apparently that song caused about 200 teenagers to erupt into a fist fight. This was last Sunday at a skating rink. The song came on, gang signs were exchanged. Before you knew it, it was just a melee. Two witnesses told the TV station that the song came on that stirred local gang tension. It's a local gang tension. No one was arrested. All the juveniles in the fight were turned over to their parents or caretakers. Probably all for the best. If you notice, they have to say parents or caretakers because most of these kids in the gangs, they don't actually have parents. I mean, they might have a mom who's doing the best she can with a government check, but they don't have fathers, you see. So they don't have parents, plural. They should say the children were turned over to their parent and or caretaker because they don't have fathers, and that's really the big problem is the failure of fathers. That's probably the fact that we don't know our father causes us to eventually lose the ability to be fathers. And then a fatherless civilization eventually commits suicide, which is what we're watching happen in slow motion every day right here in America. But we are your bastion of hope for the future, because there is hope in Jesus Christ. There's hope in the gospel. There's hope in the fact that the living God created us and that he wants us to be with him. And so I hope that you will take this broadcast right here as your impetus to seek out the living God and his son, Jesus Christ, who cared enough about you that even while you were yet a sinner and even while you were yet wicked and evil and a rotten, miserable human being, he was willing to take the punishment that you so richly deserve and save your soul. And that can make you a better person. That's the Weekly Worldview this week. Thank you for tuning in. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com and at AmericanRightToLife.com. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, whose heart is still ticking and who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.